Hi, welcome back to Joe Blogs. This video is the next in a series looking at the financial implications of Russia's invasion of Ukraine on the global economy. And in today's episode, I want to talk about what's going on in the warfare itself. Russia have recently announced that they're now preparing to withdraw from the city of Kherson. And Kherson is the key city in the region of Kherson, which is one of the four occupied states. So in today's episode, we'll talk about this retreat, what it means in terms of the war itself, whether this is an indication that Russia is now starting to retreat from all of the areas of Ukraine, and we'll have a look at why Kherson is so important in the context of this war, and whether or not this represents a turning point. Is this a critical moment? And the reason that I want to go into this in some detail is that what's going on in the war has a major impact on the global economy. Until we get a resolution, until there is peace in Ukraine, we're going to have volatility in the markets, we're going to have pressure on oil and gas and commodity and food prices, and we're going to just have a lot of uncertainty. So the best thing for everybody from an economic point of view is for this warfare to end. I'll then talk about the referendums that have been held for all four of these regions, and the fact that Russia now considers these parts of Ukraine to be part of Russia, and what's been going on with the people who live in these areas. There are reports that millions of people have been moved out of Ukraine into Russia. So we'll have a look at the statistics on that and what that means from an economic perspective. We'll have a look at the current status of the number of refugees that have left Ukraine, because there are now reports that as we go into winter, there is a possibility that there's going to be another wave of refugees leaving Ukraine because they've been displaced, they're not in their homes, and it's going to be quite hard to be able to carry on all the way through the cold winter months. We'll have a look at what's going on with regards to Ukrainian GDP, what the outlook is for 2022 and beyond, and what the current estimated costs are of the casualties of this war, both for Ukraine and Russia. I'll then share with you some really interesting data that's been put together by an outfit called the Legatum Institute, which shows which are the best countries in the world to live in and which are the worst. And I think you'd be surprised as to which country comes top of that list, and where countries like the USA, Russia, the UK, Canada, Australia, and Ukraine are coming out. And then finally today, I'll wrap up with my summary as to what I think the implications of what's going on the ground right now in Ukraine are for the global economy and what the outlook is for the next 3 to 6 months. So before we get started on all of that, if I could ask you to give me a thumbs up at some point during this video, if you're enjoying the content, please subscribe if you haven't done so already. Don't forget, I always include chapters in these videos. So if you haven't got time to watch the whole thing, you can pick and choose what you'd like to see. And if you'd like to support the channel, please have a look below where you'll find links to YouTube Super Thanks and membership, as well as Buy Me a Coffee, Patreon and Amazon shopping links. And once again, thank you so much to everybody that supported the channel. I really appreciate it. Russian Defense Minister Sergei Shoigu has ordered Russian troops to withdraw from the occupied Ukrainian city of Kherson and take up defensive lines on the opposite bank of the River Dnipro. In televised comments, General Sergei Surovikin, who is in overall command of the war, reported that it was no longer possible to keep Kherson city supplied. Having comprehensively assessed the current situation, it is proposed to take up defence along the left bank of the Dnipro River. I understand that this is a very difficult decision, but at the same time we will preserve the most important thing, the lives of our servicemen, and in general, the combat effectiveness of the group of troops, which it is futile to keep on the right bank of a limited area. In response, Shoigu said, "I agree with your conclusions and proposals. For us, the life and health of Russian servicemen is always a priority. Proceed with the withdrawal of troops and take all measures to ensure the safe transfer of personnel, weapons and equipment across the River Dnipro." Now, this isn't the first time that Ukraine has won back territory. Over the last couple of months, it's been reported that Ukraine have taken back over 6,000 square kilometres of land. So it's not unusual to be reporting that Russia has been pushed back. But this situation is different for a couple of reasons. Firstly, Russia have made an announcement that they are going to withdraw. So in all of the other areas, they've just been pushed back. So we've just had reports of fighting and troops retreating. So there hasn't actually been an official announcement from Moscow that they're pulling out of the region. It's just being reported that that's the situation. And we've seen lots of videos of Ukrainian troops raising flags in areas that they've retaken. So this is the first time that Russia have officially announced a retreat. But what's more important here is that Kherson city is the capital of the Kherson region and was seen as being a landmark victory from Russia's perspective when they took over the city. Now this map shows the occupied areas of Ukraine. And as you can see, the Kherson region is the furthest west of all of the occupied areas. And if we zoom in, you can see that the city of Kherson, which is located in the centre of the region, is actually situated to the north of the river Dnipro. And this is important because the Dnipro River is fast moving and is wide in various places. And that's one of the reasons why Russia is struggling to defend. Because as you can see from the purple and striped areas here, Ukraine has been pushing back heavily across the whole region. And keeping the supplies moving across the river has proved to be a problem because a lot of the bridges have been damaged. Now, the region of Kherson is critical in the context of this war. And this is one of the reasons why the Ukrainian forces have targeted it and are trying to win back this area. Kherson acts as a land bridge in terms of providing all of the Russian troops with supplies. The Crimea area of Ukraine was annexed in 2014. And as I'm sure you'll be aware, Russia built a bridge directly from the Russian mainland across the Crimea in 2018. Now, that bridge was recently bombed. However, it's still being used by Russia to provide supplies. So Russia has access through Crimea into the region of Kherson and the neighbouring region of Zaporizhia. If Ukraine retakes large areas of the Kherson region, it deprives Moscow of the ability to provide supplies to Zaporizhia and would also bring long-range Ukrainian artillery closer to Crimea, which Moscow sees as vitally important to its interests. Due to the fact that Crimea is now home to a huge Russian military force and the Black Sea Fleet, which Moscow uses to project power into the Mediterranean and the Middle East. The Kherson region is also critical to Crimea because it's the key source of fresh water. Following the annexation of Crimea in 2014, Ukraine stopped a canal that supplied fresh water directly from River Dnipro. However, those water supplies were reconnected following Russia's invasion of Ukraine on the 24th of February, and that's been flowing ever since. And that water is seen as being critical in terms of feeding the population of Crimea, irrigating all of the land and providing it with water for a variety of military purposes. In terms of logistics, the Kherson region includes the mouth of the wide Dnipro River that bisects Ukraine. And Kherson City, which is on the opposite side of the river, was the only place that Russia had a presence on the West Bank. Over the past few months, Ukrainian forces have been hammering the bridges over the river to hurt Moscow's ability to resupply their troops. And now that Russia has announced that it's retreating from the area, Ukrainian forces will be in a better position to attack other Russian supply lines and challenge Moscow's grip on the other occupied parts of the south, including the Zaporizhia region. In terms of Kherson's location on the Black Sea coast, it's seen as being important because if Ukraine can liberate those coastal areas, it will help both from a military perspective, but also from a commercial perspective, because Ukraine will then be able to start organising its own exports of grain and other food materials. And the final issue relating to the Kherson region is that this was the only one of the four areas that Russia is currently occupied where they had taken the capital city. So this was seen as being a landmark victory at the time, and now represents symbolic significance from Ukraine's perspective. They've won back this capital, which means that they're in control of all four of the capital cities of the regions that Russia has declared to be part of Russia. Now, before we go on any further, I'd like to talk to you about today's sponsor, Ground News. Now, I'm constantly being asked, where do you find all of your information from, all of your data, all of your stories? And it is challenging to be able to find things that nobody else is reporting upon. And Ground News is a really exciting website and app that is the world's first news comparison platform. It pulls together stories from more than 50,000 sources and posts them real time so you can see breaking news as and when it happens. But what's really different about Ground News is it gives you a breakdown of where that news originates from. So you can see who owns the news channels that's posting these stories, what level of factuality originates from that particular news source, and what political bias that news outlet has. So let's have a look at the articles that Ground News posted directly relating to today's video. So this page shows all of the articles that Ground News has collated relating to Russia's retreat from Kherson. So you can see that in total, there are 356 articles, 73 of those lean to the left, 54 of them lean to the right, and 65 of them are centre. And if we scroll down, you can see that the articles are all listed here, so I can click in and read these articles if I want to. I can see who's published the article, whether they have a left, right, or centre leaning, what the level of factuality coming from that news source is, and who owns that particular news source. You can browse for free or subscribe for as low as $10 per year. To stay fully informed on issues like this, click on the link below, groundnews.com/JoeBlogs, and subscribe for unlimited access to media transparency, bias, blind spots, and comparative reporting coverage. One of the immediate impacts of Russia's invasion of Ukraine was that a large number of people left the country to seek refuge in other countries all around Europe. And the latest data estimates that over 7.8 million people have left Ukraine over the course of the last 8 months, and that a further 6.9 million have been displaced internally within Ukraine. So they've moved away from the towns and cities that they were living in, and they're now living in other areas. So they're temporarily relocating. And this obviously has a number of economic impacts. Firstly, in terms of the impact on Ukraine, if you've got people that are either leaving the country or moving locations, then potentially that means that they're no longer involved in the active workforce, because not everybody can work from home, not everybody is completely mobile. So we're talking about almost 15 million people out of a population of 44 million. So this represents around one third of the total population. Obviously, losing that amount of your workforce and population is going to have a huge impact on the economy of Ukraine, but it's also going to have a big impact on all of the countries that are receiving those refugees. And that impact can be both positive and negative. I recently reported on what was going on in Georgia, where they've seen over 100,000 people actually fleeing from Russia as part of the mobilization corps. And that's been a real positive from Georgia's perspective, because a lot of those people have come with cash and skills. But the situation from Ukraine's point of view is slightly different, because a lot of those refugees are moving on an emergency basis. They're literally turning up in other countries with a suitcase of clothes and that's it. They're not moving as part of a brain drain, and generally they need help and they will be a cost to the countries that they're going to. And as I mentioned at the start of the video, now that winter is coming upon us, it's been reported that we're potentially now looking at a second wave of refugees leaving Ukraine. In Hungary, an aid worker at the border said the number of daily arrivals at the train station had jumped tenfold to around 300 to 500 since Russia's bombardment of Ukrainian cities intensified recently. That figure is below the 1,000 refugees per day that was seen in the spring, but power shortages in Ukraine are expected to boost arrivals over the next few weeks. Slovakia's contingency plans include as many as 700,000 people crossing into the territory over the next 3 months due to falling temperatures and continued heavy fighting in parts of eastern and southern Ukraine. A large number of Ukraine's internally displaced people are currently temporarily housed in conditions that are not suitable for the winter. Further escalation of the conflict is also a risk, the plan states. Now, in terms of trying to estimate the cost of housing and looking after all of these refugees, these statistics show that of the 7.8 million people who have left Ukraine since the start of the war, 4.7 million of them are registered for temporary protection, which means that they're being supported financially by their host countries. Now, obviously, the cost of supporting those refugees will vary depending on which country they're located in. But it's been estimated that the average monthly cost for housing, feeding, providing education, and all of the other social services that are needed for people's welfare is coming in at around $500 per month. So if we apply that cost to 4.9 million refugees, that's coming in at around $2.3 billion per month. And this war has been going on for almost 8 months now. So we're looking at a total additional cost to the EU of around $19 billion so far. And the issue we've got here, as I've mentioned many times before, is that this war is not over. This could carry on for the next 6 months or 12 months or even longer. And we're going to see an increase in the number of refugees, particularly as we go through the winter period. So these costs will be mounting. And this, of course, is coming at a time when there's a lot of pressure on all of these European economies as a result of the massive increase in energy prices that we've seen as a direct result of the war. So it's costing a lot more to buy in gas and oil and coal. Food is also more expensive. So prices are going up and a lot of European economies are teetering on the brink of recession. And we've got this further pressure from all of the refugees. So this is all adding to the problems that Europe is facing right now. Now, as well as losing around one third of all of its population since the start of the war, one of the other major problems that Ukraine is facing right now is that Russia has been targeting a lot of its infrastructure. So over the course of the last couple of months, we've seen a renewed wave of bombings and missile attacks on a lot of different cities all around Ukraine. So it's not just the occupied areas. Russia have been targeting Kyiv, and a variety of other cities in the north of the country. And a lot of those attacks have been focused in on key infrastructure, such as power stations, the provision of water, and it's causing major problems in many cities in Ukraine. And it's been estimated that around 40% of all of the infrastructure in Kyiv, the capital city, has now been damaged. And as a result of that, Kyiv is now operating controlled blackouts. So for around 6 hours per day, there is no electricity in various regions. And that's having a massive impact on the economic output of a lot of the companies within that city. Because if you're a company that's producing things, if you've got manufacturing, you can't afford to switch your machines off for 6 hours a day, because it doesn't just impact you for those 6 hours. If you have shutdowns, that often causes problems with regards to the machinery and the productivity and shift patterns and all of those sort of things. So this is having a big impact on GDP. And Ukraine's economy minister has now stated that the impact of all of these issues is that it's likely that GDP for 2022 will now be even lower than the original forecast of a 35% fall. She stated that economic output had dropped by as much as 39% in October, following on from the 35% contraction seen in August and September, and went on to state that if the blackouts continue over the next few weeks, then GDP could fall even more. In terms of the total number of casualties from the war so far, we don't have any reliable data. The most recent data that Russia announced was that they'd lost 6,000 people. However, that seems to be a lot lower than the other estimates that I'm seeing. However, Mark Milley, who's the United States Joint Chief of Staff, recently estimated that around 100,000 Russian troops have been killed or seriously wounded in this war, and that Ukraine had also suffered similar losses, in addition to around 40,000 civilians who've been killed. Now, in terms of trying to put an economic value onto those losses, it's previously been estimated that when a soldier dies, the economic impact over the course of the rest of his life is around $500,000. So what that's saying is that over the next 30 or 40 or 50 years, that individual would earn around $500,000 in total, and therefore that GDP is lost forever. So if we apply that figure to the numbers we've just talked about, that means from Russia's perspective, the 100,000 soldiers who've been killed or seriously wounded equates to around $50 billion of lost GDP. And from Ukraine's perspective, the 140,000 people that it's lost, both the soldiers and the civilians, equates to $70 billion of lost GDP. Now, obviously, the loss of life is the most important issue here. And 240,000 people being killed or seriously wounded is an absolute disaster, a travesty. But when you then look at the economic impact of that, it makes the situation even worse, because the world economy has lost $120 billion of future GDP as a result of what's going on in Ukraine right now. And the problem that we've got is that we're not at the end of this war. It could go on for a long time yet, and those numbers could rise, both from a casualties point of view and also from an economic perspective. So far, this video hasn't really been that uplifting, so I wanted to lighten the mood a little bit by looking at an index that's been prepared by an institute called the Legatum Institute, whereby they rank every country in the world by 12 different categories to work out where the best place in the world to live is. The 12 classifications that the Legatum Institute use are safety and security, personal freedom, governance, social capital, investment environment, enterprise conditions, infrastructure and market access, economic quality, living conditions, health, education, and natural environment. And based on calculating how strongly all of the countries in the world perform on all of those ratings, the single best country in the world to live in right now is Denmark. And it's the second year running that Denmark has held that position. The second best country in the world to live in is Norway, which previously was number one 2 years ago. Third on the list is Sweden, and fourth on the list, making it a clean sweep for Scandinavia, is Finland. Number five is Switzerland, number six is the Netherlands, seven is Luxembourg, eight is New Zealand, nine is Germany, and 10 is Iceland. So it's really interesting to note that nine of the top 10 countries are located in Europe. So let's have a look at a few of the countries on this list. The United Kingdom is coming in at number 13, and it's interesting when you look at the historic rankings that a few years ago it was ranked as number 9, but it's been slipping down the table ever since. Canada comes in at number 15 on the list, having previously been as high as number 11. Australia's number 16 and has fallen from a high of 10 a number of years ago. Japan, which is the third largest economy in the world, comes in at number 19. And the USA, which is the single largest economy, is number 20. And if we look at the figures to try to work out what areas are letting the USA down, the two that stand out are safety and security, which is the measure that's calculated including the conflict for crime, terror and war. The USA has a score of 69 compared with Norway, which has a score of 1. And the other main downfall from the USA's perspective is health, which measures the general health of the population and the likelihood of dying from illness or disease. And the USA's score on that front is 68, which is interesting when you compare it to Japan, which has a score of 1. Right below the USA on this list is China, which is the second largest economy in the world. And China have actually been increasing their rating because they were previously ranked as low as 23. And the scores that are predominantly letting China down are social capital, living conditions and infrastructure and access to markets. Now, it's interesting to note that some of the biggest economies in the world are not seen as being great places to live. France is coming in at number 22 on this list. Italy's number 31. Argentina's number 57. Brazil, number 68. And Russia is coming in at number 70. And the three areas that Russia is scoring very badly on are safety and security, personal freedom, and governance. And if you look a little bit further down the table, Ukraine is coming in at number 78. So let's carry on right down to the bottom of this chart and see which countries are rated as the worst places to live. Afghanistan is rated as the fifth worst place to live, Chad the fourth worst, Yemen the third worst, Central African Republic second worst, and the worst place to live in the whole world, according to this table, is South Sudan. So what's the summary and conclusion today? Well, I wanted to post this video because it's important to keep an eye on what's going on in the actual war in Ukraine when we're talking about all of the economy and the impacts as we go forward. Because until we get a resolution, until there is an end to this war, this situation is going to carry on. We're going to carry on having increased prices, volatility, and lots of issues on an ongoing basis. And the fact that Russia has announced its retreat from Kherson is potentially a turning point in this war. This could potentially lead to further retreats and possibly some form of peace resolution. But fundamentally, unfortunately, it doesn't look like that's happening. The fact that President Putin called a mobilization of an additional 300,000 troops on the 21st of September doesn't give us an indication that Russia is looking to close down this war. They're actually looking to increase the amount of personnel that they've got on the ground. The main reason that they pulled back from Kherson City appears to be a supply problem. Because of the Dnipro River and the issues relating to the bombing of all the bridges, Russia's been struggling to actually get sufficient materials over to all of the forces in that area, and Ukraine have been targeting that position really heavily. So the actual situation looks like Russia is recamping, regrouping, and will now potentially dig in and fight fiercely in the area that it's sitting in. And for the reasons that I mentioned earlier in the video, Kherson is a key location because it sits between Crimea and Zaporizhia. So if Russia was to lose control of this area, it would cause further problems for Zaporizhia and would definitely mean that Russia would be on the back foot, and potentially then the Crimea area would also be at risk if Ukraine decides that it wants to carry on pushing Russia back and potentially try to retake that zone. So the overall summary of the current position is that it doesn't look like there's any end in sight. It looks like this war is likely to go on at least until the end of 2022, but more than likely well into 2023. And that's obviously bad news for Ukraine, Russia, and the global economy. Ukraine has physically lost around a third of all of its workforce as a result of this war. 7.9 people have left the country. Another 6.9 people have been relocated, so they've moved around within the country. So that will obviously have a massive impact on GDP. But in addition to that, the infrastructure in Ukraine is now being heavily attacked by Russia. So they're losing power and water. That's meaning that companies can't produce as much. They can't physically operate for as many hours in the day. And of course, a lot of companies have also lost their buildings themselves, which have been bombed or damaged, or the infrastructure has been affected in the area. So all of this is disastrous from Ukraine's perspective. And the estimates now are that we're looking at something like a 40% fall in GDP for 2022. But that assumes that everything stays as it is right now. If the situation gets worse, then obviously that GDP could go down even more. And as you'll be fully aware if you follow the channel, Russia is also being heavily impacted. Its GDP is forecast officially to come down somewhere between 2 and 3% for 2022. But as I've said before, those forecasts look highly optimistic to me. When you look at what's going on with oil and gas and all of the other main parts of the Russian economy, those sectors are seeing massive reductions in revenue, 20, 30, 40% falls, particularly in gas, where a lot of Europe is now switching off, and Russia can't replace those sales with any other sales because it needs to liquefy that gas and it simply doesn't have the facilities. But it's also seeing a massive impact in terms of its oil exports. The EU is on the verge of introducing its ban on the 5th of December, and the oil price cap is also due to kick in at the same time. And Russia simply won't be able to avoid that because it doesn't have enough ships to be able to move the volumes of oil that it needs to sell it into India and China and the rest of Asia. So Russia is hurting right now. Its GDP is crashing. But unfortunately, the global position is also really negative because the knock-on impact of this war has been disastrous for the rest of the world, because we've seen massive increases in the prices of oil and gas and food and commodities, and we're also seeing changes in the supply chain. And all of that is coming at a time when the global economy wasn't in the best of health anyway. At the start of 2022, we had really high rates of inflation all around the world, and that was the main target for most economists. But unfortunately, what happened when Russia invaded Ukraine was that prices went up even further. And we haven't been able to get those prices under control. We're now seeing a lot of interest rate rises coming all across the world. And all of this is pointing towards a big global recession in 2023. And unfortunately, until this war finishes, we won't be able to draw a line under all of the problems and start to rebuild and move forward. So the situation is bad. It's going to get worse, and unfortunately could keep getting worse as we move further and further into 2023. So sorry to be the bearer of bad news once again, but I'm just telling you as I see it. Hopefully you found this video useful, informative, and thought-provoking. If you've liked what I've said, please give me a thumbs up and don't forget to subscribe if you haven't done so already.